Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. I'm Kevin Zimmerman, joined by phone. Kellen Olson's coming from Vegas, where he's been. How's it going?
What's up, man? I'm doing this podcast literally in front of like dirty room service dishes, so it's just Vegas, you know? Just Vegas.
The Empire of the Suns Dirty Dishes in a Hotel Room podcast.
Yay.
We haven't podcasted since Devin Booker officially inked that extension. It's pretty much like what we all expected. There wasn't an option on it, so there's that. Suns getting it done this year, I think, is important for a number of reasons, and I don't agree or believe there's even much discussion into why they shouldn't have done it or should not have paid him that much money. Do you agree?
Yeah, there was like a weird energy in Twitter for like a week where people thought like he wasn't going to sign it because the Tyler Ulis thing broke. And I don't know if Suns fans are just like really defensive when they feel like bad news could potentially be coming or there is bad news and they just think that it's going to be the absolute worst case scenario. But this was always going to get done. He was always going to get this money. He was always going to be worth this money. Wouldn't you know it, there are garbage takes coming up around the place that are saying, like, here's his numbers compared to this, and here's his numbers compared to that, where all you have to do is watch this guy for three or four games and then not look at his numbers through a microscope and just look at them for what they actually are and realize that he is one of the best young players in the league. And the bottom line is that this is the way the league is set up. Teams are put in this position, like smaller markets, to be able to take advantage of being able to pay more money, and it also puts you in this weird situation where Andrew Wiggins is the chief example of guys being paid too much money, and then all of a sudden it's too much money you gave to such a young guy when you didn't really know what he was yet. So that's more of the fault in this than anything, but I still think that Booker will prove to be worth this money. I don't really see a conceivable way. He would have to become a worse player. He would have had to peak at age 21. Like, he would have to start going down right now in his trajectory, and that just doesn't seem logical at all. So I don't see how this contract isn't worth it for the Suns.
The only thing you could argue, I guess, is, well, like Wiggins and Aaron Gordon, to some extent, he didn't even get the max. They don't have the attributes of a number one player. Booker has those. Obviously, he's kind of a negative on defense, but you can't use plus minuses in that. He's played with awful teams. You can't use the excuse that he just fills up numbers on bad teams that are losing, because on bad teams, that just means teams lock down on him only and only him. So that argument doesn't work. He didn't play at the end of the last few seasons, so you can't say he was that terrible and that he was leading a 21-win team, because he wasn't playing half the time there. So, yeah, it's just, to me, I just read a Deadspin article. I shouldn't do that to myself. But there are other articles out there that are like that, so I guess that's why I bring it up. But, yeah, I think he's going to... If you look at the teams that have money next summer, there are a ton in big markets, and you do not want to test him going to even restricted free agency where they can match, because then you might make him mad. And the other thing that I'm writing about is you need him in place. You go into free agency next summer without that being a question mark, and that's how you attract free agents that are not Devin Booker. So that's my spiel on it.
Yeah, they're obviously, I think the part you didn't hit on was that I believe the main appeal of doing that was that they were going to have $17 million more in cap space, I believe was the number.
Yeah.
If they waited to do this until next year, and it's like, no. Like, this is, like you said, all those reasons it's so easy to screw up from that vantage point. So just pay him now, give him his money, and now you've got him here for the long haul. But, dude, like, just watching the team from the start of last season and see I wrote the story for us on his contract extension. And he had that game in Philly where he had that run when he came back from, like, a one- or two-game injury and averaged, like, 35 points over four. And the fifth was the Toronto. He had the adductor injury. He comes back in his first four games and averages, like, 35 a game again. And then he gets hurt again. And it's just, like, it wasn't even points per game, though. He was winning those games. Like, that Philadelphia game you remember in Philadelphia, and a lot of people remember, he scored 46 and he just took over. It was done. He won that game on his own, and he was doing that a lot. He was doing that in his rookie year and his second year too. So to say or even like entertain those arguments is kind of ridiculous that we have to do it, but we might as well now for like the one time we're going to do it just because this is coming up. Of course, we'll reintroduce ourselves to the subject matter if it comes back and he has a really rough start to the year, 20 games of the year, whatever, and he proves to those people right to some extent, but I really don't expect that to happen at all in the slightest. Like I said, he would have to get worse because he was so good. He was one of the best two guards in basketball at 21. So I don't see how that's not worth it. Is he a number one option on a team in the future on like a championship team? Maybe not. Maybe he's like a number two option instead. But even if he's a number two option at 21 years old with that outlook, the team has to pay him the max. Like, that's how this works. Jokic got all that money, and he's terrible on defense. This is just the way things work.
That's a good wrap to it. Also, I will say that, the only reason they would have waited is they could have gone over the cap and not signed him until they got another big free agent. But one, that's banking that you get another free agent. And two, they can pretty much get close to that anyway. Like, if you do the math there, you will probably have $20 million in cap space. You might have to like not pick up a qualifying or pick up the contract for one of Marquise Chris or Dragan Bender if you want to have a little wiggle room. That's going to come this October. And then otherwise, it's just opening up a few million here and there to get to another max contract. So they're not super far off if they got a player who's a max player who wants to sign to join Devin Booker as it is. So with all that said, let's jump to Summer League. Let's just start at the top. DeAndre Ayton's been really good.
Yeah, he's been really good while not being really good.
Right.
He's averaging 16 and 11. And I said this on Bickley and Murata earlier. He was flat out eliminated from the game in the first game because for some reason the team decided to game plan around someone for Summer League. It was like, I don't get what you're getting out of the experience for your team by just trying to, I guess you're trying to win the game, of course, but I mean, good God, that sucked to watch. And he still put up the numbers. And then the same thing in game two, he was still receiving a lot of attention. He wasn't being flat out double teamed when he catches the ball every time, but it was still there. And again, it was there in game three. And he's still being very productive. I don't think he has been outstanding by any means. I haven't had a handful of plays where I've been blown away. I think he had that one defensive play that I outlined in one of my pieces against Dallas, where he like did his pick and roll coverage, recovered, got to the rim, and then had a really good contest at the rim. He's had a couple of those on defense where he's had a lot of plays where like the tools are there for him to be great, but. Yeah, I haven't been absolutely blown away by him, and I think that's what the most impressive part, because the big appeal of him and his floor was because he could be such a productive player. But I'm just interested to see how that translates, of course, to real basketball. I mean, Summer League is Summer League at the end of the day. He was always going to be productive here, I think. So I'm just interested to see how does 16 and 11 look on like a 34 win team, if you get what I'm saying. Like, are his contributions going to be felt? Are they not going to be felt? And I think that's like kind of the thought exercise that I had after three games with him.
I think it's good that we saw those doubles and all that attention, because it's just highlighting why you draft him, which is you didn't have a rim roller. One, like, just how much he's sucking guys in and pulling them off shooters is, I think that's, like, is Rick Carlisle going to react the same maybe in a game? Probably not, because he's going to be like, you stay on Devin Booker, obviously, but maybe he actually gets easier opportunities in the NBA. One thing I have noticed, and in the first two games, we picked apart the same stuff we talked about all through the draft process. He was not exactly setting great screens, not sealing great defense. Occasionally, he would float, especially like when he's not engaged in the game. But I think I did see improvement, like after the first game especially, where this last game against Orlando, he looked pretty good. Like, he was switching, he was kind of hedging, he was recovering in like the right angles. And the thing I've noticed with him is like he is paying attention to the angles that he's recovering off pick and rolls on. Like, he's trying to keep the guards from passing back to his man until he recovers on him, which is, I thought, was impressive. But yeah, and then obviously when things get late in the game, he kind of takes over the last two games, I feel, and that's something I also saw in college. So to me, nothing's really surprising, but it's good to see production.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's important to touch on, that he has improved over every game, and I would agree with that his third game was his best game. That was the third game was the closest we had to a, like, I am really, really glad the Suns picked him game, where he looked like the number one overall pick. I mean, he always looks like the number one overall pick because of his sheer physical size. But there were plays that he made in that game where it was impressive to see him and his skill set and everything. But, yeah, I don't think we were ever going to get a realistic, even summer league type of opinion on him, just because this is kind of a weird space for someone like him in particular, who's still physically dominant. I think the one thing I'm interested to see in the rest of the games, it seems like to me the vibe from Kokoschko through three games has been like, guys are going to keep playing. Like, I would not be surprised if Dragan Bender and Josh Jackson are still playing in the tournament. That's been the vibe I've been getting, at least. And with Ayton, I'm interested to see if they can get him more involved in the post, because he's just not touching the ball enough for how valuable he is to this specific team. And for him in post touches, it's kind of been, we haven't even had a sample size small enough or big enough to be a small sample size in terms of how much is he touching the ball, how much is he trying to attack with the ball, how much is he settling for the jumper. I think he's had like 5 or 6 legitimate post touches so far through three games. So that's one thing I'm watching for the most with him the rest of the way.
I guess to transition to the other guys, it's been also an issue because they legit don't know how to throw a post entry pass. As much as it might be his fault, it's still like bad passing is half of the issue there. And one guy who has kind of shown some two-man game with him is Eliakobo, who he was hitting him for lobs at the rim the other night, had that behind-the-back pass off pick and roll where Ayton hit a nice little elbow jumper. So do you want to talk about Eli? Because you wrote about this today where we all were like, oh, you're a scoring guard. And he even like said to me when I tried to ask about this, like, oh, yeah, I can also play off the ball. But he looks like a real point guard. That's nice.
Yeah, he looks like a real point guard just because of his like rhythm that he plays with. I really like how he's always playing fast, but it's not fast. It's really hard to explain, but he's always keeping his eyes active when he's looking for passes. And there's just like moments where there was a back cut available for Shaquille Harrison, and he looked at it for like 3 straight seconds, and Harrison finally made the back cut. And he has his best feel is when a help defender is coming, where does he make the pass that help defender came from? So that was for the lob for Ayton, and that was also for that behind-the-back pass to Ayton for the jumper. He's really good at that, at this level at least. And that is where I grow pause more than anything, because I was a big Emmanuel Mudiay fan coming out of the draft, and when I saw him at Summer League, I saw dozens of plays and passes exactly like this where I was like, yeah, the passing is legit. It looks awesome. And then for whatever reason, it just doesn't come together in the NBA. That's just kind of a hard transition part about Summer League. And I'm not saying that we can't be excited about Okobo's passing, but I think to me, that is the one skill set the most where it's such a low level of defense here. And we've seen that, especially with how good the Suns have been defensively against these teams, especially. That's kind of been the proving point of that. to where I'm not going to be over the moon just jazzed about how he is as a passer. But I think the most exciting part is just that it's even there. And that's the added bonus for him, of course, because he's more of a scoring guard still. Like, I still believe that he's – I think he's a point guard for sure, but he's a scoring point guard. He's not like a natural point guard or is that what they call it, pure point guard?
Sure.
The Chris Pauls of the world, whatever the cliche is, that is not what he is, and that's completely fine. And his passing is an added bonus with that.
Yeah, it was more – I guess you use rhythm and it's – yeah, it's just like anticipation, I guess. I don't know. And setting it up and manipulating things, which for a young player, he really is just like, all right, here's kind of a hole. I'm not going to get to the basket over here, but I'm going to make someone else come up and guard me, and then they're going to mess up, and I'm going to get a good pass off. And it'll be interesting to see, because he actually hasn't shot enough where it's been like, here's how he's going to balance it out. He's been very, like, pass first, but I think that's by design because he has a lot of talent around him. Let's go Dragan Bender. Bad first two games, like, same stuff that we saw first few summer league runs for him. And then he started hitting his threes. He didn't have any turnovers, I believe, last night against the Magic. And suddenly he's like, all right, this is a good role player for an NBA team.
He said after the third game that he said his problem was that he was just kind of running through the plays and not looking to be aggressive or decisive. And that is like the entire problem with him as a whole, is that he is never aggressive or decisive. He, the two defining plays that I'm going to, like, since I was there and up close, these are the two plays I'm always going to remember if he busts out, are he had a play in one of the first two games, I don't remember which one it was, where he caught the ball on the left wing and was open for a three. The closeout was coming towards him. Davon Reed was wide open in the corner. There was no other defender on that side of the court. And Bender could either shoot or pass to Davon Reed. He did neither. He didn't even pump fake. He just kind of tried to drive, and then he traveled and turned it over. And it was it's just one of those things where you're like, dude, like, how – You're obviously a smart player who sees things the right way. Like, how is that what's coming out of you with what he has, like, in his locker and everything? And it comes down to a lot of stuff that I'm not really comfortable talking about the players, which is, like, the mental part of their game, how confident they are in themselves. And I don't like really talking about that stuff, so I'm not going to. But the second play was he had a play in the Sacramento game where he was in the same sort of area, like top of the key, left wing, left elbow, something like that. And he was driving on Harry Giles, and he actually beat him on the first dribble in like the first 2 to 3 steps. He beat him to the rim. And all he had to do was really take a little bit of contact and then get to the rim and try and finish, whether he got blocked or fouled or he finished or whatever. It was there. Instead, he went towards the right side of the court for some reason, like, kind of faded away a bit, and then tried to take a 16-footer, and Harry Giles knocked it into the sixth row. And it's another one where you're just shaking your head and going, like, man, just be aggressive, just stick your shoulder into him. I know Harry Giles is a strong dude, but stick your shoulder into him. You have position, draw the foul. Like, you're a professional, you're a former top five pick, you know how to draw a foul at the rim. Like, just do that there. And he knows how to do that, but he's just not doing it for whatever reason. And those are the types of plays that you keep seeing for him over and over again, where in the first year it was just like, okay, he's inexperienced, he's raw, he's young, he needs to take time. And the second year it was kind of like, all right, you probably shouldn't be doing that anymore. And now in year three, it's just completely unacceptable. And it's going to be completely unacceptable every time he makes one of those plays. It's not just if he does like four of them in a game, it's if he does one of them in a game. And the fact that he had 8 turnovers and 5 points through two games, like, signifies that, and that a guy like him having 8 turnovers in 2 games for how much he's not going to touch the ball is just ridiculous. It's absurd.
Yeah.
So it sounds like I'm ranting a bit, but it that's just how frustrating he has been, because you see him on Monday and yep, he's hitting his shots. He's being aggressive. He's playing confident defensively, and he has a very solid game. Like, that's what he's supposed to be doing for this team. And beyond that frustrating part is the more frustrating part, where it's like, we don't even need you to be a top five pick anymore. We just need you to be the guy who hits threes, plays defense, plays confidently, and doesn't do dumb stuff all the time. Like that's all they really need out of him with this group, because they've got Ayton, they've got Jackson, they've got Booker, they've got Bridges, they've got all these offensive pieces around him. At least the first three guys are primarily offensive pieces. Like, they need supporting cast guys like you. So they might even need him more in that sense than they did before when they picked him number four overall. And I've been talking for way too long about it, but yeah, that's been the battle with him. And it's the reason I went so long on it, I think, is because this is when it's finally coming to a head. You know, I think fans have given up on him in his rookie year. They gave up on him in his second year, and this is not me giving up on him by any means, but we're getting to the point now where if the Suns were to give up on him and if he continues to play like he did in the first two games across the rest of the season, not every game, but for a good chunk of the games, then them like just declining his option wouldn't be the most shocking or dumb thing to do. Like, it would just, at some point it has to happen.
Yeah. I think with him and Chris, it's completely plausible one of them gets declined. I just can't tell which one, and the whole Marquise Chris not being there makes me not even know which one of them should or should not be in the summer league, I guess. Like, do they think Chris is, like, fine, all right, you just need to show it and stay in shape? Or are they like, Bender, you need more experience because you're going to play more than Chris? Like, I don't know. But I'm with you in most of that. I will say that that's why it's so confounding, is because he'll have a game where he looks like one of the smartest players on the floor, is not making mistakes, just playing freely. And you just look at one play last night that defined his mental state. And again, I hate talking about that stuff too, but he had like a, I forgot who it was, but like a guard switched off on him and someone kicked it out to Bender. And even though the guard was pretty much right in his face still and hadn't pulled off of him, Bender was like, I'm shooting this because I'm 7'1", and he made it. And that was like, you're taking that shot, and before, if that guy was within 15 feet, you might second guess it. Like, that's what's concerning. And to that point, like, when he went into summer league, just like what he talked about, what he got better at in the offseason, he was working on, he's thinking about what he's working on, which was, I got bigger and stronger, I'm going to practice driving. And like the first two games, he was just putting his head down every time and not thinking like, hey, I worked also on my shot. Like, just do that if you have an open shot. It is overthinking. And I, again, like, mental state stuff is, you don't want to go there, but you can see when it, I think you can see when it's overthinking. To me, you can.
Yeah, it's, I talked enough about it. Yeah.
I won't go on that bad of a rant, but Josh Jackson's play, and I talked to you about this like on Twitter, it was slightly concerning to me because he's supposed to be like your guy who's going to play, just say he's a guy who's going to play 36 minutes a night, like if that's what you expect of him, and he looks like a rookie still to me, and he's yet to me have a good game. And where Bender actually had decent defensive games in the first two, I thought, Jackson's still been kind of up and down. Like, I don't think you should be Josh Jackson getting blown by Jonathan Isaac twice. That's concerning. And the shot selection has been pretty awful. Is he shooting 25% probably?
Yeah, it's something like that. And the first two games, he's just chucking up every mid-range shot he can. And then the third game, he's like, oh yeah, I probably shouldn't be doing that, so I'm just going to go to the rim all the time. And then he had 5 turnovers and 7 fouls and was just a mess. And 3 of 13 from the field, I think, in the third game. For a second-year player like him, who especially had these bad habits at the start of last season and then they kind of went away towards the end of the season, for them to come back in summer league is concerning. And if there's one player that I'm going to be quote unquote concerned about through summer league, I think it would just be him, just because he can't be mid range, not good on defense, dude. Like, and yeah, that's what he's been through three games, especially as a second year player who was, he made second team all rookie, right? Or did he not?
I don't even
know. No, he didn't. But he, for a guy who was one of the at least 5 to 10 best rookies in the second half of last season, to come in here and look like this, it's, of course, he took the shots of the eye and is playing with a mask, so that could be playing a role as well. But that is, he cannot be bad on defense, or not bad, but he just can't even be like below average or average. He has to be good on defense, and then he cannot be a guy who takes a bunch of mid-range jumpers, because maybe when he's 26, those are going in more, but they're certainly not right now. And I just saw a guy who didn't really know what his role was in Igor's offense and wanted to still have a predominant role in the offense, so he was just shooting whenever he could.
That's going to be an interesting discussion, and I even asked him, too, before they left, like, what's your role in the offense? And he just sidestepped that and was like, I'm the defense guy. And that's, like, how are he and TJ Warren going to fit into this offense? Like, I thought that he would be handling the ball more, too, so that's going to be a thing.
The defense guy took 43 shots in 3 games.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he's fighting that, like... That's what Triano always said about him. Like, you just need to convince him that he's a, like, defense-first guy, and as much as he says and hears it, he's still not exactly that. And then you see moments, like, down the stretch when he got knocked in the face, and then he has two great defensive plays, which it's just effort defense, which is very different than team defense, which is another thing. But, yeah, you just got to see him really develop into that role and be more than just saying it, I guess. One thing with him also that I'll go into is, like, the word of the day is kinesiology, because he does not know how to use his athleticism, like going to the rim off the bounce. He's still doing that thing where he takes his first of two steps that you're allowed before you travel, like 20 feet out, and then he's 15 feet out, and then he's flying through the air for the final 10 feet. And if one guy is even thinking about helping on defense, like, then he's either blocking a shot or altering a shot or making him throw the ball away. So it's like one of those things where he needs to, like, figure out how to take an extra dribble, take smaller steps, get to the rim, and, like, be more under control, I guess, and use the verticality instead of, like, he's using all of that athleticism just to get to the rim.
Yeah, there's some recalibration there for sure, and who knows if we're going to get it. That's a fun thing to say about a former top five pick.
Like, it's like how to move your body. It's not even as much, I guess it's basketball skills, but it just is concerning, I will say.
Yeah, a lot of people were tweeting, like, we can transition to Mikal Bridges now, but man, Mikal Bridges is going to take Josh Jackson's minutes this year, and I don't think that's going to be the case necessarily, but I think the argument there, or the point there is that Mikal Bridges is defense-first dude. He knows that, and he also knows that he shoots threes, dude, and he was invisible in the third game, and that's just because when you play the role that he does and accept the role that he does, that's just how games are going to go for you sometimes, and I think he's fine with that, and I think the team is fine with that. And he's been as advertised. He hasn't had this huge scoring explosions or anything, but the catch and shoot threes have been extremely impressive. And there was a play I mentioned to Scott Bordeaux when it happened. Justin Jackson for Sacramento was bringing the ball up, and he was in like semi-transition, and no one was really in front of him. Mikal Bridges was like two steps behind him, like recovered to him at like half court, got in a defensive stance in front of him and kind of cut him off. And I looked at Scott and I was like, have you seen someone do that for the Suns, like, ever? And he said no, and I said no. He does a lot of defensive plays, and just overall, he had a block where he was taking a charge and then the charge was no longer in play, so he recovered and then blocked the shot. He does stuff like that all the time, and he's really good, and just everything that we liked about him coming out of the draft has been showing here. And he, to me, has been the most impressive guy so far. People are going to hate on me and say it's Ayton without a doubt, but in terms of getting everything that we were expecting, I think it's been Mikal Bridges so far.
Man, yeah, I don't have much more to add than that, other than I'm curious if they're like hiding him or if they just know what to expect, because it feels like they could have played him more, but part of the reason they haven't is because Davon Reed has arguably been the best player, or Shaq Harrison, probably Davon. What do you think of, I guess, combo question with both of those guys and what you've seen out of them and roster chances?
Yeah, well, I think Josh chucking up 4-3 shots on three games also isn't a good fit for Mikhail coming in and getting shots up. So there's just a balance there. And Davon has played really well as well. So those are the two main spots you look for him to get minutes in, and they're just not there. And someone like Alec Peters even like hasn't really been able to get shots up because there's just no shots there for him. Davon has played really well. He looks like the guy that we expected and the guy that I really liked coming out of summer league last year. And I think it would be a mistake to let him go. He is perfect for what they want with Jackson and Ariza and Bridges. Like, he fits in there perfectly. It's going to be really fascinating to see if they keep him, if Troy Daniels is going to get his minutes, because by all accounts, like, Troy Daniels is an excellent shooter. But if Davon Reed is a pretty good shooter and is a below average to average defender in his first full season in the NBA, that's loads better on defense than Troy Daniels is. So I think that's going to be interesting. And I just don't really see why they would want to let go of Davon Reed. I think they wanted to, because that was kind of the whole point of extending this. I think you would have guaranteed his contract otherwise, right? If you wanted to keep him.
Yeah.
Or you were sure about keeping him at least. And if it was a thing where they really wanted to see summer league and see what happened, John Gambadoro was reported otherwise. But if they really just wanted to see how he looked, he's looked fantastic. And you can talk about your boy Shaq. He's been even better, I think.
I'll just say that Davon's like dunk attempt that he didn't even make was your classic, like, I don't have a contract, I'm going to murder some fools here at summer league. So I enjoyed that. Shaq has been like that with all of his, I don't know, it's the same stuff. It's the defense. It's like him, he's ripping so many guys. I don't know how many steals he has. I should probably have looked this up before this podcast, but he's everywhere, man, and he's had a decent jump shot, passing, not great vision out of pick and rolls. Like, half the court is kind of like blind to him, the right side, because he's left-handed, but still, like, he's got some assist numbers going a few games, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, maybe Isaiah Cannon was your other potential. I think he was hanging around summer league with those guys, right? So maybe he's like in the conversation for third point guard, but Shaq's making a really good case for it. And interesting to see what happens with free agency, because there are still lots of, you know, borderline like third string guys, not just at guard, but across the NBA that are unsigned, I believe. Like, what's Shabazz Napier doing? So do the Suns bring in another guy, or do they just keep one or both the Shaq, Davon? It's I think they have the roster space to like maybe keep one of those guys or even both if they really wanted to.
Shaq's, I think Davon just fits in much more naturally with what they want to do. Shaq is like a non-shooter, is just clunky by default, and as a non-scoring point guard is also clunky by default. Like, you need your point guard to be able to create his own shot, and he cannot do that consistently. But I love what he does on the court, obviously. So I think it's him by default if one of them has to go, especially with what you said. There's so many more point guards out there. Guys that do what Davon Reed projects to do just aren't really out there because those guys are valuable. So I think that's where the divide comes with those two. But I think if the right point guard is there, they should let go of him, Shaquille Harrison. But I'm not sure that point guard is there. And I'm not mad at I would not like the point guard rotation to be what it is. But with that being said, if it's Knight, Okobo, and Harrison, and like Okobo and Harrison are your backup certain nights that they switch off, I wouldn't be too upset with that. Assuming Knight is capable and competent, which who knows?
Yeah, it's more of, I guess, do the numbers, do the math. If you think you can survive, like, Shaq's like a guy who's like the third point guard who's probably very valuable in a practice setting every day that you're not playing a game. Davon is more functional if you actually think you're going to need that like last guy on the roster more often. So yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I had on that.
Any last points by you? Any thoughts on Jack Cooley, who Vince Carter apparently has a crush on because he wouldn't stop talking about him last night?
I missed this whole Vince Carter thing. Apparently he was not a pleasure to listen to, but I was there, obviously. So Cooley was getting MVP chance, was the fan favorite out of everyone. The Suns have had There's been a really good fan presence here. It's no offense to the Suns fans who showed up, but it's nowhere near like the years when the past 2 years when the Lakers fans were there and made it feel like a legitimate NBA game. I think the first Lonzo game last year felt like I was at an important regular season game. Like, that's how hype it was in the crowd and everything. And of course, on the court, it was definitely not that. But the Suns fans have had a really good presence so far, and they've been the best team I've seen. I've only seen like 10, 11 teams so far, but they've definitely been the best team I've seen so far, which is not a terrible thing. Like, you can make fun of them being undefeated in summer league and all, but hey, it's better than being 0-3.
And terrible to watch. Yeah, it's been a good watch.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah. They've been fun to watch. Mostly, I think the third game was the most fun to watch because the first and the third games, rather. The second game was a bit of a drag, but the first and third, a lot of guys are playing well together, which has been a lot of fun to see.
That is Kellen Olsen live from Las Vegas, where you probably have stuff to do today. I don't know what you would do on a day off in Vegas.
I've been trying to like not completely spend all my money on the tables. I've been like making my rounds here and there and trying to be like really as not safe, but just trying not to blow all my money. Like I said, cause I've been here a while.
Stay safe financially more than anything.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been winning some money on the World Cup though, which is always fun.
Let's nice. Nice. That is Kellen. He'll be writing as the Suns continue once we know what the heck's going on with their bracket in Summer League. I'm Kevin Zimmerman. Thanks for listening.